It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, America.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running on this Friday on the front porch, the 21st day of July, 2017. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Didn't even have to think about that. Wow. I must be really on my game this evening. I'm Bob Kincaid, and it is the end of the week, and that means we'll be having the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, or some version of it, later this evening. For the first time in God, I don't know how many years. Sparky won't be hosting Friday on the front porch that I'm aware of. So I'll just try to run it on this end, although I don't have the first foggy idea how. So it may work or it may not. But at any rate, it being Friday on the front porch this evening, if you want to participate in Friday on the front porch, you need to Skype into me. I'm kind of busy running a radio show here, so I can't just sit there and I can't call all of you into the group. You have to reach out and call into the program. And of course, that that Skype contact is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype, and it'll get you right in. If you can't use Skype, well, this part's not complicated. All you have to do is use the stress line. Yeah, it's that easy. Just use the stress line and reach out at 304-663-4676. 304-663-4676. And you will find that the stress line, at least I hope you will, is working quite nicely and has been for quite some time. So, you know, cross your fingers. But that's only if you can't use Skype, okay? Only if you, because we only got one of those lines. When we raise up another $400, $500 or so, we'll get another phone box in here and we will add yet another telephone line. The line's here, it's just waiting for the equipment. And we'll that'll mean two people who don't have to be on Skype for Friday on the front porch. So there we go. So that's where it's at. Now, if you want to, of course, as usual, run over to the, if you would like to be part of the Madcap Multimedia Wacky Zany Extravaganza that is the Horn Chat Room during the program's hours in which this program is live, well, just click on Chat Room over at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right in. You'll be greeted by Anatole and Jug of Punch, the Liver Man. Sailor Chick is with us this evening. Good evening, Sailor Chick. As is VT Blom, and all capably moderated by Midweek Utility Chat Room Moderator Steve from Georgia Stan. Now, and this is kind of the icky part, we come to the end of the week. And we are up against what I hoped we would not be up against. To wit, another one of those Friday on the front porch community-made miracles. The fundraising goal for this evening is $505. It could be much worse, but thanks to the overnight crew of subscribers, thanks to folks like Joan and Marcy and Steve in Ohio, different Steve, as well as our friends up on Shadow Mountain. What a cool place to be. Hey, where do you live? Shadow Mountain, man. Really? Yeah, I'm not going to fuck with you. That's a heck of a place to... It's how cool, Shadow Mountain. It's instead of being $650, it's $505. And that's a big deal. So thank you very kindly to the overnight crew. Anatole says we need a Festivus miracle. No, just a Horn FCC miracle will suit nicely. A Festivus miracle would be like, George Soros suddenly deciding that we needed to be fully funded for the next 10 years. Yeah. So, but anyway, if you want to help out, and let's see, if you want to help out, just go to headonradionetwork.com, click on chat room, or not chat room, click on contribute, and fill out the very brief little form on the interface there, and that'll kick you over to PayPal, and you can do what you want to do. Okay? So, there we go. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, some people do, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV, 25801. Let me know, and I'll let Boss Man Wayne know, and that way he won't get his spider-proof gloves chewed off when he reaches into the mailbox. Okay? Okay. So, that takes care of most of the housekeeping, with only 7 minutes in the program gone. I'll update along the way as we try to knock down the the $505 hole. We're still trying to, I've heard tomato juice works. We're still trying to get the parfum de skunk off of Lassie, so she's not going to be much help right now while the horn is down a hole here at the beginning of the fourth week of July. Oh, where do you want to get started this evening? Well, I got one. Got an email from, he loves it when I share this stuff with you. I got an email from Jay Cruzen. Yep. You know, we're all just a member of one big community here. We don't have to be in love with each other. We share, we share the community with one another. And we try to be civil with one another. And we tolerate each other's foibles. And, that applies to Jay Cruzen, and he's been around for a very long time, so, that. Subject line, stop pushing a false narrative. Yeah, okay. I wonder what this email could possibly be about. Well, let's put it this way. Another subject line for this might be, leave Pootie alone! Okay. Yeah, I know. note coming in the minute I announced the email, the note coming in from Ace is saying, oh no, I can guess where this is going. Yep. Um, stop pushing a false narrative, also known as leave Putin alone. You keep pushing a false narrative that Russia elected Hillary Clinton when you have to know it was because she was a lousy candidate and the Dems are falling by the wayside.
Okay.
You know what? I think I'd be feeling a lot better right about now if somebody had elected Hillary Clinton. I mean, you know, besides the American people, you know, who did by about 3 million votes. Unless you're jumping on the Trump train and agreeing with the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini that there was all kinds of illegal space aliens that voted illegally. And that's why we got to have every bit of every single individual's voter data from every one of the 50 states. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You keep pushing a false narrative that Russia elected Hillary Clinton when you have to know it was because she was a lousy candidate and the Dems are falling by the wayside. Okay. I mean, you know, all right. I think Jay Cruzan means that means to write, you keep pushing a false narrative that Russia elected Donald Trump when you have to know it was because she was a lousy candidate and the Dems are falling by the wayside. Well, no, I have not argued, not once, not never, no how, no way, that Russia finagled a single vote. Let's be clear about this. Because, you know, we got some stories in the stack here that might actually have some bearing on all of this. What I say and what the evidence supports, and what even Trump's director of the CIA says, is that Russia meddled in the electoral process. Now, just because some member of the Purity Brigade has not received a personal call and been shown the actual data themselves, just because nobody has gone over and kissed precious Glenn Greenwald's toe and showed him the data and said, "Now, you know, this is top secret stuff. This is eyes only. You can't publish this." You can't give this to your, buddy, Julian Assange. No. Well, just because that hasn't happened doesn't mean it did, that the meddling didn't happen. Christ almighty, Donald Trump is up to his goddamn glued on eyebrows in Russian mob money. But again, you know, we wouldn't want to believe that, because that would spoil the narrative, wouldn't it? Talk about your false narratives. The one, you know, like Hillary Clinton didn't win the popular vote. Yeah, she did. Was she the best candidate? No. Was she the most disliked candidate the Democrats have ever run? Yes. Should she have realized maybe in, say, 2008 that she's never going to be president of the United States? Yes. Would Bernie Sanders have beaten Donald Trump? No. No. And as far as Russia is concerned, one, there's the mob money. And frankly, if you're in the upper echelons of the Russian mob are a little different than the upper echelons of Russian government. Okay, you need a crowbar to separate them. All right, so there's that, and then there's the data, the actual data that shows that there. It's the propaganda. It's the news stories that flooded through social media. Again, I will say what I've been saying, and that is what happened in 2016 could not possibly have happened without social media like Facebook and Twitter. Because people had their opinions manipulated. Cambridge Analytics is not, I mean, just because it's got Cambridge in front of its name doesn't mean that it's a bunch of boring tweed-jacketed academicians. We don't seem to have a problem understanding that the Koch brothers are trying to take over the government of the United States, but a different billionaire, that Mercer asshole, Cambridge Analytics, leveraged by, you know, who? And how about the 190,000 times in one day that the voter registration system of South Carolina was hit on Election Day? Yeah. No, that was apparently the Purity Brigade is on the Trump train and believes Trump when he says that it was some 400-pound dude in his mother's basement. And I'll ask the same question I asked previously. How is it that we don't have any problem believing that someone inside the United States would monkey with the election results? Or I don't know, maybe that opinion's changed too. Because there seemed to be consensus on what passes for the American left. Ha! What left? There seemed to be consensus that the 2000 and 2004 presidential elections were flat stolen, and God knows how many others along with it. But we can't wrap around, or maybe, you know what? We just hate Hillary Clinton so much that we sort of look back and say, well, if you were going to steal it from her, she deserved to have it stolen from her. She's horrible. After all, she's a neoliberal, which is now defined as anybody who ever brought a cold cup of coffee to Jill Stein. It's kind of like, and I want to be careful with the use of this analogy, but. You know, to this day, I don't know if we've fully comprehended the degree of hate, disgust, loathing that some people have for Hillary Clinton. I don't. I tend to reserve that for my real enemies. Kind of like what I was saying the other day about the day that, you know, the day that Dick Cheney dies, all decorum will go right out the window and I'll be doing the happy dance naked out in the yard. I reserve my real hatred for people who really deserve it. But there are people out there in the Purity Brigade who reserve that kind of hatred for Hillary Clinton. And I can't fathom it, but I have to. It is what it is. Jay Cruzen continues. I agree with you on a lot of other issues, but I'm tired of being alienated by people like you who voted for Hillary, and it's just sour grapes. Well, it does sound like sour grapes on your part, Jay Cruz, and that's good of you to admit that. And if you feel alienated, I'm terribly, terribly sorry. But we had a national one-question IQ test on November the 8th. And some people passed, and some people failed. 3 million more people than voted for Donald Trump passed that IQ test. The Trump voters? Eh. The Jill Stein voters? Eh. Oh, sorry. Jay Cruzen says, I'll continue to support the horn, but just know how hacky you sound when you promote these unsubstantiated allegations that Russia is responsible for the ascension of Trump. By the way, I sent a similar email to Malloy. Well, good for you. But no, it only sounds hacky if you're already so consumed by hatred for Hillary Clinton, and a shit ton of disinformation that you're willing to overlook the obvious. And the obvious is that Donald Trump, being mobbed up with the Russian mob, that Russia had a reason for wanting him in the White House. So that he could, pay back the VIG. Yeah. So, a little something to think about as we get started.
Leave Pootie alone.
But speaking of Russia. Because the stack is big and thick. you got to be careful about reading the bumper stickers out there. Ron in Raleigh says, I pulled up behind a Chevy pickup today, and on the tailgate there were two stickers. One sticker was the misinterpreted Ben Franklin quote. Those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. The other sticker said, support our troops. We'll need them to overthrow our government. Does this sound like a massive case of cognitive dissonance to you? It would, Ron, if I thought that anybody who would put two stickers like that on their truck had anything with which to cognate. Anyway, Latin. But it sounds like I'm surprised that if you didn't pull up beside him, you didn't find some pasty-faced, doughy white dude up to the base knuckle of his little finger and his nostril mining, because what you got there, Ron, is your booger eater. Mm-hmm. And a reminder, courtesy of Billable Rick, I sent a happy birthday message earlier today, but it is it's Tracy, the lady cab driver. It's Tracy's birthday today. Happy birthday, Tracy! I hope you are. I hope there is something absolute. Well, I mean, it's a little early yet, I reckon, on a Friday, being how it's only 3:24 out there in fabulous Los Angeles. But I hope there's going to be something just sizzling and wonderful. On the grill. And maybe one or two cocktails for your birthday. Happy birthday, Tracy. Happy birthday indeed. courtesy of Ralph's. Ralph's trying to get us started this evening on the on fundraising with a $25 challenge. Ralph's will match the first $25 that come in, and that will take us down to $450 to go to finish the week and be A-OK at week's end. Thank you, Ralph's. Thanks for getting us started. If somebody will just match the $25, we will be rocking and rolling. Rick, you pettifogger, you pettifogging lawyer, you. Email Bob, 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 Bob. Listen, adding that fourth Bob is not going to protect you from gimmick infringement, okay? Stop telling us about how we should talk about foreign policy. Okay, well, that may redeem you. That's at least a jingle's worth. Courtesy of Michael in Madison. Hey, let's rub a little salt in the false narrativist's narrative. According to Daily Banter, the Senate Judiciary Committee wants to hear from Jill Stein. Yeah. You know, the one who had dinner with Pootie and Mike Flynn. That. Jill Stein. She of the she of the demon vaccinations and the murderous Wi-Fi. She who gets lost and leaving Massachusetts and doesn't know the difference between Cincinnati and Columbus. And Michael raises a point that I was actually on the verge of making, but I'll let Michael make it because he's going to do it better than I would have. Also, why does everything always have to be just one thing? Hillary was a lousy candidate, and the Russians meddled. Trump colluded. It's all true. You know, that's why some multiple choice questions have A, Hillary was a lousy candidate, B, the Russians meddled, you know. Imagine, hypothetically, a multiple choice question. Why did Trump become president? A, Hillary was a terrible candidate, B, the Russians meddled, C, Trump colluded. D, all of the above. Sometimes things don't have a single cause. A lot of times things don't have a single cause. I mean, think about a guy, he's been drinking tequila through a straw since sunup. And long about noon, he goes out to the street, and he's gonna go get a bite of lunch. And he goes to cross the street, and as he's crossing the street, having been drinking tequila through a straw all day, he goes to light a cigarette at the same time that something comes in on his cell phone and he looks down to read a tweet. At which point, he is run over by a Hillary by somebody with a Hillary for President bumper sticker. Why did that person die? Well, a lot of people would say, see, smoking killed him. Somebody else would say, well, you know, if he'd only lived the upright and sanitary life of a non-drinker, he'd still be with us today. Another person might say, it shows what distracted pedestrianizing can do to you. And, of course, over there in their little corner, the Purity Brigade would say, "Goddamn Hillary!" When, in truth, it's what? E. All of the above. We do, and I think, that's true. Michael adds in, don't forget the Electoral College in that multiple choice question and voter ID. So that would make it G, all of the above. It's a perfect storm. In regard to my pedestrian question, Laborman says, Bob, there's only one cause, and you didn't list it. Well, what did I miss, Laborman? I know. That damn pettifogging and lawyers. Steve in New York says, I can't resist. We really need to identify the but-for cause. The proximate cause, yes, the holy grail of the law. That cause which, but for its occurrence, nothing else would have happened. But see, it's the complexity of causation that gives rise to legal concepts like comparative contributory negligence, where juries are asked to assign degrees of fault. And you wind up with a jury verdict based upon, you know, and that can be a mess, too. So, I sure hope we get a lot sharper between, say, now and November of 2018. And downright diamond-edged, sharp, come 2020. Otherwise, my prophecy, answer hazy, ask again later. Otherwise, my prophecy is going to come true. And we're going to get the second term of Donald J. Trump. And just saying that makes my liver quiver. Yeah, there are a million reasons. Okay, not a million, but a bunch of reasons. No, there may be millions of reasons why Trump winds up president of the United States. Some of those several millions of reasons may be the people who couldn't be bothered to get up off of their precious twee little asses and go vote.
Well, that's because Hillary was a terrible candidate.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sugar. Did you not get a pony? I mean, I'm all for kumbaya, and I want hand-holding. But, you know, I can't feel real good about holding hands with somebody whose paw is covered in poo. And if you spend all of your time flinging shit at Hillary Clinton, your hands covered in poo. Deal with the fact that this election was a disaster. And go forward determined not to let it happen again. Now, it's not going to, you know, maybe it won't be so awful in 2018 because there won't be a presidential election. But the problematic other side of that coin is that There's usually not a big turnout in midterm elections because it's not sexy enough for some people to get off their precious twee asses and go vote. It's also going to be difficult because, well, it's going to be more difficult in the Senate than in the House, but the fact remains that you've got the Republicans have a decided advantage this time through. Now, I actually went and looked the other day to see what the 2020 Senate elections look like, and it's almost a mirror image flip over of what 18 is. But the fact of the matter is the Democrats have to defend something like 23 seats or 25 seats, counting Angus King and Bernie. I don't think either of them are going to have a problem. While the Republicans have to defend only, you know, like 9, including Luther Strange and that. We'll just call it the Strange primary down in Alabama, where there are where the Republicans are arguing amongst themselves as to who hates Obamacare the most. And the Democratic Party is so moribund as to be barely able to field a candidate. Right. Oh, thank you very kindly to Frank. Thanks, Frank. Frank just met Ralph's challenge, and that means that the fundraising goal is now down to $450 to finish the week. Can we do this? $450 to go. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Frank. Thank you very much indeed. So, it's going to be it's an uphill climb in 18. Because if you thought we had voter suppression in 16, you ain't seen nothing yet. It'll be off the chain come 18. And what does our side, presuming and in doing this, I'm committing a grave error by assuming that, you know, there is an our side and not, you know, 92 different sides with varying degrees of ideological purity. But in order to retake the Senate, the Democrats have to win every seat, have to protect every seat they have, which includes Joe Manchin, which is not going to be easy. No, Paula Jean is not going to win the primary. I mean, in infinite, you know, I guess if in infinite universes, there's one where she does. This is not that universe. That's just a fundraising vehicle for some people who want to make some more money off of well-meaning but otherwise not particularly well. It's a fundraising gig. Okay? So the defense of Joe Manchin will have to take place in November. And I don't think I can be part of that. I really don't. Because I don't think there's a rat's chance in hell of the Democrats taking the Senate anyway. Because Dean Heller in Nevada, they've only got to defend, what, 8, 9 seats, and we would have to defend all of our own and take 3 of theirs? Well, one of the vulnerable ones was Dean Heller of Nevada, and Dean Heller, by opposing the right-wing healthcare, the attempt to kill several tens of thousands of American people. Dean Heller may be safe. Jeff Flake in Arizona. Mm-mm. Ted Cruz. Yeah, there. The Democrats in Texas will beat Ted Cruz. How about some Texas Democrats? Tell me if that's going to happen. Beth, any idea? Right. Mississippi? Mm-mm. Alabama? No, sorry. Bob Corker in Tennessee. Yeah, he's going to... Nope. Wyoming? Uh-uh. The Senate is largely a lost cause. I don't like saying that, but it's pretty well true. Now, there's a fighting chance in the House. If people really come out, if so many people come out to vote for a Democrat that they can overwhelm the voter suppression and the finagling. But they're also going to have to wise up and pay very, very close attention to social media to see when the information is being deliberately manipulated. So that's a tough call. And who knows? You know, how bad do things have to have gotten in Washington, D.C. for Spicy to have called it quits, thrown in the towel, gone to sing with the choir eternal? No, he didn't commit suicide or anything. And Spicy just said, out of here, thanks. Because of the appointment of Anthony Scaramucci to be the White House Communications Director, America has only one question right now, and that is, can Anthony Scaramucci do the Fandango? I don't know about you, but it's very frightening to me, Galileo. Spicy's gone. Parts of the Trump legal team have said, nope, sorry. The underside of that bus is getting a little crowded, Donnie, so I don't think I want to go under it. I'll just get out of here before you throw me. Yep. It's getting weird. And you know how the month of August is supposed to be the really, really dead time in American politics because there's really nothing happening in Washington, D.C.? Well, that may be another norm that's out the window. Norm! No, gone. It may be a very interesting August. And for once, I hope Bob Mueller's team is locked down, glued shut, and has a layer of duct tape around it to prevent any leaks. Because it's fairly obvious that... Comrade Kumquat is filling his pants just thinking about all the stuff they can find. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of stuff there. The Russia stuff is there. If there's anybody who can get Donald Trump's actual tax returns, it's Bob Mueller. And if he starts nosing around in you know, his taxes, or maybe gets a look at the taxes of Udi and Cootie, or possibly even Precious Ivanka. It's not going to be smoke anymore. It's just going to be an outright inferno. Because Donald Trump, and if we have to have a discussion about this, we're in worse shape than I thought. Donald Trump is not an ethical man. Donald Trump is not an honest man. And Donald Trump would run over the bones of his sainted granny to get at a bag of money, and he doesn't care whether it comes in rubles, dollars, pounds, euros, won, yen, Krugerrands, don't matter. You know, there's that old Bible verse that says, for the love of money is the root of all evil. And if there is one human being in this country who stands as the living embodiment of the idea that that saying, that pronouncement is true, it's the filthy, corrupt, ignorant fool who occupies 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Exactly, labor man pointing out. Bob Scrump is a jagoff and a mental defective. He is that and ever so much more. By the way, Steve in New York with a note. I'm sorry to say it again, however, it comes down to this. Does our desire for it exceed their desire for it? You know, it's really kind of a wait-and-see sort of situation. And I don't know that right now I would posit that our desire is. It really has a lot to do with the purity, folks, because we live in a time of razor-thin electoral margins. We live in a time when an ancient mechanism designed to protect slaveholders still determines the presidency. We live in a time when people win elections by one percentage point. We also live in a time when Republicans always vote for Republicans. Democrats, on the other hand, sit off in the weeds and you know, pick at their toenails and wonder if the candidate is pure enough. Oh. So that's almost enough to make my my worn out old Magic 8 ball move from answer hazy, ask again later to just no. You know, do some research. Those of you who are such staunch and steadfast defenders of the innocence of Putin, look at the money laundering through Deutsche Bank. Look at the money laundering through Cyprus. Just look. Then again, there's none so blind as those who will not see. So, there's that. But no, a lot of things in the stack this evening. You know that lawyer that was in that was among the, you know, 187 other people who met with Uday? Yeah. Which of course had it was, I mean, it's not even a real story. Just ask the Purity Patrol. Well, it turns out that there's been some journalism going on. And courtesy of Reuters, we found out today that Natalia Veselitskaya, well, you know, she's not just some little old country lawyer, Slavic version of Atticus Finch, out there working on Pootie's entailment in exchange for a bag of hickory nuts. No. Who she is, Natalia Veselitskaya, is counsel for the successor to the KGB. Yeah, she's the FSB's lawyer. She represented them in court. Yeah. And she won. Imagine that, being the lawyer for the Russian FSB, and you win in court. But Your Honor, all evidence points to my client being in the right. It's true. But all evidence also points to me wanting to go on breathing. Judgment in favor of FSB. They don't exactly have, well, never mind. It's just anti-Russian bigotry on my part. I mean, maybe I'd feel differently if this program was sponsored by, oh, I don't know, some skeevy Russian website that was part of the disinformation campaign that was deliberately run during the election cycle of 2016. Maybe I'd be talking, maybe we would have kicked off this Friday on the front porch talking about sex robots if I was backed by some billionaire Russian oligarch. Who knows? Instead, we'll just keep trying to raise $450 to finish out the week, and then just have next week to hopefully wipe out the remainder of July and lick the Lithuanian and nudge the Norsky. Yeah, maybe. And of course, it might be worth remembering that the FSB was run by none other than that snuggly, cuddly, lovable, huggable, smoochable, kissable, magnificent conversationalist Pooty Poot back before he became dictator of Russia. No, Natalia Veselnetskaya is not an official of the Russian government. She's just their lawyer. Is totally innocent. Of course Donald Trump would take... Of course Uday would take meeting with her. Yes, nothing. I don't know if you saw the footage of the... or the clips from the interview that NBC's Russia correspondent did with Sergei Lavrov. That guy's a dick. Asked a simple question about the about whether or not there were more than two or three meetings between Pootie, your huggable, snuggable, loving, sweet, and Tangerine Tiberius. Lavrov was a total dick and said, yeah, who knows? Perhaps
Perhaps they go to toilet together.
Asshole. But, yeah, so, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter that the lawyer... I have a hard time saying this. It doesn't matter that the lawyer for the Russian secret police, you know, the same folks who rounded up Pussy Riot and you know, that bunch, who runs massive counterintelligence cyber operations, you know, just like we do. Doesn't matter that their lawyer was the one who showed up saying, I have damaging information about Hillary Clinton, for she is the devil. No. Mm-mm. Nothing to it. Nothing to see here. Move along. Absolutely. Hey, thank you, Charlie. Charlie helping us along this evening. We're down to only $420 to go this evening. Thank you, Charlie, so very much. Note coming from from Robert in Australia. Thank you for reminding me. Speaking of robots, Robert in Australia says, did you see the guard robot that committed suicide? Poor little guy got so depressed he tried to drown himself in the mall pond. Yeah, it is. Oh, and the photograph of him just kind of... Okay, because everything's a movie reference. That was the 21st century version of Sunset Boulevard. You remember the ending, and the beginning, actually, of Sunset Boulevard, don't you? William Holden, face down in the pool. And it gave me no pleasure to note that the robot's name was Steve. You don't like... No. That's a... No. No. Just no. Just... Meeny, 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 meeny. Splash. Meeny, meeny. Splash. How long before we wind up with... How long before we wind up with, I don't know, antidepressants? For robots. Yeah. Oh, well. And there are a bunch more stories out there. Scott adding on to the multiple choice test, why we end up with Trump 45. Two more reasons for that list: compliant or lazy corporate media, irretrievably stupid voters. Well, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, there we are at the end of the filibobster. Now we embark on a great experiment. Can I run Friday on the front porch? Well, as long as you're not calling from a phone number, as long as you're calling from Skype, I think I can. If you want to involve yourself in Friday on the front porch, call me. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. BobKincaidHorn. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. And we will get the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable rounded up until, and just see if we can make the magic happen. Otherwise, it's a 3-hour filibobster, or, you know, one call at a time. However, you get the idea. If you need the stress line, if you can't call in via Skype, well, by Jove, One person can use that until we get the new gizmo in to bring the next phone online. Now, bear in mind, if your connection is sketchy, or your audio has issues, it may not work. Because I've got about 92 tabs open here, and I'm monitoring 6 devices. So that limits my ability to manage all of this. But we're making progress toward another one of those community miracles, Friday on the Front Porch Community Miracle. We've got $420 left to raise. That's 10 people at $42 or $42 with 10 people. And $120, $210, $4 at $105, $8 at $5,250, $26.25, $16. You get the idea. Because I know you all get such a kick out of all the ciphering. All right, break time. This is listener-supported conversation radio for a Friday on the Front Porch. A hot, sticky, gooey, late July, Friday on the Front Porch, live from Appalachistan. It's going to take a lot of... we're going to have to hydrate during this Friday on the Front Porch. Just wander on up, grab a rocking chair, take a pull out of that crockery jug over there with the corncob stopper in it. It'll get you where you're going. Agnes has left a couple of big ice-cold pitchers of sweet tea and lemonade. One, the other, or you can get real kinky and mix your sweet tea and your lemonade. You know, what's in that crockery jug goes good with the lemonade, too. You betcha. All right, break time. Let's fire this thing up. Dial in Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. We'll be back.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up to the skies and see. I'm just a poor boy, I need no sympathy. Because I'm easy come, easy go, little high, little law. Anyway, the wind blows, doesn't really matter to me.
Mama just killed a man, put a gun against his head, pulled my trigger, now he's just begun, but now I've gone and thrown it all away. Mama, ooh, didn't mean photo of a man.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the pandango?
Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Galileo, Galileo,
Galileo, Galileo,
Piccolo.
Magnifico!
He's just a poor boy from a poor family, sparing his life from this monstrosity.
Easy come, easy go, will you let me go?
Bismillah,
no, we will not let you go.
Let him go!
Bismillah,
we will not let you go.
Let him go!
Bismillah,
we will not let you go.
Let me go!
We will not let you go.
Let me go!
We will not let you go.
Never let me go!
Mamma mia,
mamma mia, let me go.
Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me, for me, for me.
You know, years and years and years of hearing that song on, you know, that now that that generation is the generation that gets Muzak done for them. I mean, there's nothing quite like hearing Smells Like Teen Spirit reduced to Muzak. You forget what a magnificent piece of production that song is. And what a genius Freddie Mercury and the whole group were. Well, the ones that are still alive are. But instead of running off and, you know, taking care of errands or anything because I needed to be sitting here, I actually left the headphones on for that. And damn, it sounded good. It just sounded nice. And of course, that's a long-distance dedication going out to new White House Communications Director Anthony Scaramucci. Scaramucci, Scaramucci, can you do the fandango? Thunderbolts and lightning, very, very frightening me. Galileo, 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 Figaro, Magnifico, blah, 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 Bismillah. So it is Friday on the front porch. It's 10 minutes past the hour. We've got $420 to raise if we're to have a Friday on the front porch community miracle this evening. And Sparky, it turned out, is actually running the Skype group, and glad I am of it, because I'm sure somewhere along the way I would have screwed it up monumentally. So let's run over to the Skype group and see what's happening. Yo, Sparky. Anybody? Bueller?
Bob?
Yeah. Rick.
Hey, how you doing? Yeah.
I'm good.
I don't see Sparky.
Okay. Oh well. Okay. Maybe. I don't. Then this thing must have just spontaneously generated itself. I'm totally at a loss here.
Oh wait. Is that Sparky?
No.
Is that Steve?
I'm here. I keep getting cut on and off, though. I don't know what's going on. I'm here for now.
Okay, I just saw Sparky's name pop up on my list, and I figured I didn't know. I just knew that I would probably screw this up.
Well, so far so good.
Okay, so did you do that, Steve?
No, sir. I didn't do anything other than I called you, and then it kept going in and out, and I would reconnect, and that's where we're at.
Okay, let me do one thing real quick here before anything else can get hopelessly complicated. Because, see, I had... Okay, just... A, okay. And okay, if this makes the call go away, we'll try to reestablish it. Okay, good. And is everybody still there?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Still there.
I sometimes use Skype on my tablet when I'm not in the studio, and I was getting Skype calls on the tablet too. So, well, damn. So I don't know how people get into this conversation. Maybe we need to shut down and let me start over. Okay, because I had a group put together, and then this one rang in. I'm sorry, it's just a technical goddamn nightmare, but we're going to try to have Friday on the front porch, and I want other people to be able to get in, okay? And right now, I don't know who the host is, so that means I don't know who can add or anything, so.
So do you want me to call you again, Bob, or how does this work?
Yeah, everybody call me, because like Sailor Chick wants in. And
right.
Angry Indian wants in, and a lot of people want in.
Cool.
So, right. we'll Rick, is that okay with you?
Absolutely. Let's give that a shot, Bob.
And John in Central PA, is that okay with you?
Well, what's it going to hurt?
All right. Okay. So, we're going to try this again. And maybe it'll work. Who knows? But everybody who's been trying to reach the program, okay, dial in. Dial in now. Okay, there's our first person. And I'll just keep things muted for a moment. Okay, there we go. And there we go. All right. I'm hoping we're getting all set up here. Hell, I'm hoping I'm going to have the bandwidth to pull this off. Okay, that, that's weird. Okay, Steve, here's the problem. You're going to I don't know what's going on here, but you're apparently calling in from an old group. You need to call in from just you. And we'll see I don't know. God damn it. I need to learn how this all works. Some days the magic works, some days it doesn't. Okay, let's see if anybody's there. Is anybody there?
Yeah, Sailor Chick.
Okay. Hey, Sailor Chick, cool.
Hey, Bob, Scott is here.
Okay, so there's Scott, there's Sailor Chick. Steve, are you there? All right, stand by. All right, there's Charlie.
Hello?
The volume is going up and down. I don't know if I'm the only one who notices.
It'll probably do that until it settles into the group.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so Charlie, do I have you?
Hello?
Yeah, who I got?
Can you hear me? It's Charlie.
Yeah, I got you, Charlie. You're there. All right, and now let's add Billable Rick into the mix. Okay, Rick, Billable Rick, are you there?
I am, yes.
Because, see, it's weird. I keep getting calls, and it says missed call from.
Hmm.
But so
strange.
So far, I'm hearing from everybody. Well, let's see if Steve can get in. But anyway, if you want to... if you want to be part of this Friday on the Front Porch call, then reach out to me on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. I just tried to add the Angry Indian, but his system apparently will not work with everybody else's.
All right, I'm here. I'm checked in.
Okay, hey, Steve, good.
Thanks, right. Bob.
No worries. This is finally making a little more sense. But you know, just give it a minute. We'll get things going. We'll move get things going around. But well, let me start with Sailor Chick. You're not out on the high seas. Welcome to the conversation.
I got off the Nancy Foster on Monday and drove home from Charleston. I had my car down there.
Oh wow!
And I not often I get to take my car, but she was in and out of Charleston. We made a couple of stops in Morehead City. And one in Savannah, Georgia, which is really a beautiful place. And most of the time we were out, but we ran into Morehead to avoid some weather.
This is that time of year, isn't it?
We were working off the coast of North Carolina, right off of Hatteras, where there's a lot of shipwrecks. A lot of them date back to World War II when the U-boats were operating there. And we had two different groups of divers. And the divers go down and they examine various shipwrecks that they pick. And they just examine the condition of the wreck and the reef material that's growing on them, the coral and the fish and the other sea life there. And they got some great pictures, some of which I put on my Facebook page.
Well, if you'll forgive me sounding like a hopeless little fanboy, that just sounds so freaking cool.
Yeah, when I'm an engineer, I spent most of my time in the engine room, but once in a while I'm able to come on out and see what they're doing, you know.
Oh, like so you're the one that gets to get on the radio and say, the engines won't stand much more, Captain.
I actually got to use that phrase, something similar to it, because we had some overloading problems.
You didn't.
Yeah, well, we were working with one Z drive. And one generator much of the time when the divers were diving, we were just holding position. And once in a while, the generator would hit its high limit, throw an alarm. So I had to call the bridge and say, hey, you know, she can't take it anymore. It was really funny, though. I mean, no danger or anything like that because they set the limit at 75%.
No, but if the opportunity arises and you don't use that line, I mean, you're just.
Yeah.
It's
awesome.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, I mean, I don't want to get into any state secrets or anything, but Do you get a red shirt?
Only if you buy one.
Damn it.
They do sell crew wear, and they have a bunch of nice shirts, and a couple of them are red. But unfortunately, they don't have the Starfleet badge on them. But well, I don't want to wear a red shirt. I don't want to get wiped out. Come on.
Well, no. Wait a minute. You've got lines. You're okay. It's red shirt, no lines. That's the death
it's
sentence.
Red shirt. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I'm one of the – I am kind of an extra, though. I'm in the relief pool, so I'm not a permanent crew member.
Okay, so just don't.
Somebody who can be wiped out, you know, if they really feel the convenience.
Yeah, just reject any away team offers. You know, don't beam down to the planet, okay?
Right, I don't beam down to any planets. I just get off once in a while for a cold beer. That's about it.
Oh, now that sounds nice. Cold beer. I mean, you know.
Oh, geez, and Charleston and Savannah are two craft beer paradises. If you can get to either one of them, Charleston, South Carolina.
I was reading on social media the other day. Somebody that has an establishment said, you know, only in West Virginia do people walk in and say, y'all only sell them home brews. You don't have any good beer like Budweiser.
Oh my God. Friends don't let friends drink that stuff. And there's so many good different kinds of beer to drink these days.
Well, you know, I'm living the life sanitary these days, so I can only fantasize. But you know, I can tell you this, and you know, I hesitate to use the word never. I'll never drink another Budweiser, Bud Light, Michelob Light, Michelob Ultra, known around here as Cheerleader Beer. Never again. Never. Mm-mm. No way.
No, there's just no reason to. There's no reason to. I mean, they're just these micro brews are popping up all over the place. And there's just no reason to drink garbage.
No, and you know, I'm not a total hop head. I don't mind an IPA once in a while. But these beers that are crafted by, like, young hipsters who are like, oh, man, we screwed that one up. Yeah, well, throw three buckets of hops in it. We'll call it a Lithuanian IPA, and everything will be great.
Oh, I don't like that. One of the other crew members and I were kind of more into lagers and pilsners, and that's what we were looking for. There's a few out there that are getting pretty good. And it's just a matter of looking. People are getting kind of tired of, you know, extreme hops. So
yeah. And Bob, and you know, if you've got the talent to craft, you know, to lager a really crisp, pale, golden, sparkling pilsner, yeah, there's a lot of art in that.
Yeah, there is.
Because really, you know, you don't have a lot of malt sweetness to work with, and you can't just, you know, you can't just heave a bale of dried hops, you know, dried Hallertau at it. You can't. But you mentioned, you know, Savannah and Charleston. It is beautiful down that way, and it's, you know, as long as you can avoid the politics, you're okay.
Well, the nice thing is, you know, I did a little, it was a haunted tour of the various bars and other establishments.
Oh, yeah. You got pounded by the time you got to the end of the tour, didn't you?
Actually, I paced myself. I had one at each place, but it was really, really fun and informative.
Well, I just want to interject something. One for 10 seconds, and then I'll get out of here and let you and Bob resume. If you're ever in Charleston, go to Pugan's Porch, one of the best places I've ever ate in my life, and I just put a link in the Skype in the chat room.
Cool. So
really, check that out. If you're ever in Charleston again, that's where all the locals eat.
Oh, I'm in and out of there periodically.
Yeah.
So.
The locals know where all the great restaurants are. This isn't a tourist restaurant. This is just some really, really great food. So,
well, I was about to ask you how it was spelled because, you know, it's in the chat room now. People, you know, that's subject to being spelled with just about every letter of the alphabet, but it's Pogans Porch. And it's, well, anybody that names the restaurant, that's got to be, you know, beats the hell out of going and eating something cooked up by Paula Deen. Yeah.
Nobody goes there.
Allegedly, it's haunted, too, so that even gives it more of an allure, so.
There's a neighborhood in Charleston to visit, too, and it's Park Circle. I don't know if anybody's heard of it. It's hipsterdom maybe, but it's got a lot of great little restaurants and pubs and stuff like that there. So it's not in the downtown area. So you'd have to, it's kind of in the middle of where you would think there'd be nothing. But that's a nice little area. Lots of little places to go eat and drink and so forth. Park Circle. And they've got a Facebook page. And there's a lot of information on it on the web. I'll put a link to it. But that's the neighborhood. There's residential housing around it. And you're right near the old Naval Shipyard, which is now a lot of private shipyards and businesses there. But it's just growing, you know, by leaps and bounds. Young people moving into the area. Old businesses being converted into new things. And a lot of these little microbrews popping up. And the one we really like down there, I'm going to throw in a plug for Holy City Brewing. That's the nickname. I think Charleston's nickname is the Holy City. And so Holy City Brewing is the place to go. It's off of Dorchester. Good beer. And they've got good food, too. So I don't want to monopolize everything.
Oh, you're not. I'm nerding out in a delightful way.
Oh,
We spent the weekend for it, and
it was every lunch hour we went somewhere different in Park Circle, which is like 5 minutes from where we work. The ship is based at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, which used to be part of the old naval complex in Charleston. And now it's a big law enforcement training center. Cops, federal cops come from all over the country, and they train there. They got residents.
The crappy ISPs in West Virginia suing to prevent little co-ops from forming to deliver internet to underserved areas of West Virginia. And I mentioned how shitty Frontier is. Well, here in the middle of Friday on the front porch, they just crashed. So,
oh,
so I'm getting covered up in emails, you know, where'd the program go, Bob? Where'd the program go, Bob? Where'd the program go, Bob? And I just had to reboot the router, you know, which is one of the 18 things that I deal with while I'm trying to keep the program going.
Bob, you just need more arms. That's all.
I do. I just need to be. I just watched Rogue One, Agnes and I did. And at one point in time, there's this this creature that seems to have a whole lot of tentacles. I need tentacles. I could give up. I could trade in, you know, the fabulous good radio host looks just for a few extra arms. And maybe a couple of extra sets of eyes. But it gets it, or you know, just have a reliable ISP. Maybe that. Who knows?
Laborman says you're back.
Yeah. I just got it rebooted, got the recording started, had to restart. Oh Jesus, you don't know. Can't stand much more. And you know.
I could kind of sympathize with you there about malfunctioning equipment. Believe me.
Oh, you know, you've got a lot more to deal with than I do. I suspect, and with people, you know, like under the ocean, you know, there's probably a little bit more at stake. But we're there. But we are back. We are back. Hopefully people won't just give up. And hey, you know, I love having the program. I love having it all crash when we've got $420 to raise, because everybody goes, well, there goes Bob. He must be taking the night off. But you know, we're here. But no, I'm tickled pink to have you in the group this evening. It's awfully good to hear from you.
I think the last time I called in was when Trump won the election, in quotation marks.
Yeah.
And I was kind of three sheets to the wind and wasn't too terribly happy. Well, when I went back to work on a government ship, it's like any government facility. It's got the president and the vice president's pictures prominently displayed in a common area, in this case, the mess decks. And I just made sure I flipped them off every night sometime, you know. You know, just giving my respect.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Even Moonam, Sailor
you
Jack.
Are number one.
Hey, Billable Rick, what's happening?
Hey, I saw a real treat last night in Santa Monica. It was a free concert. Do you remember Eric Burden of the Animals?
Oh, yeah.
He's still around. He's still performing. The guy is still kicking ass, man. All his fellow band members are dead, of course.
Rock and roll. Rock and roll will do that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's the act is called Eric Burdon and the Animals. So the Animals consist of a bunch of hipster-looking guys who are really great musicians. Probably, you know, the oldest guy is probably no more than 35, probably younger than that even. And just tremendous. He played for about an hour, you know, kind of short. But, you know, it was free, so I couldn't complain. You know, I heard all the, you know, the standard, you know, House of the Rising Sun. And We Got to Get Out of This Place and some of the other hits they had. And he also played a song by Lead Belly. I'm trying to remember the name of it. But it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Well, it sounds like. So, what were some of the hits?
Well, let's see here. Let me call it up here. House of the Rising Sun. We Got to Get Out of This Place. I'll do a song list here. Just a second.
You know what? I ought to run and get Ferg. He does a passing fair version of House of the Rising Sun.
Okay. What was really cool is the very last song that they did was We Got to Get Out of This Place. And it started out with the standard, We Got to Get Out of This Place, and so forth. And then there was an interlude where it kind of morphed into like a Jimi Hendrix guitar solo for a while. And then it came back to the, you know, We Got to Get Out of This Place to wind the show up. But, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Well, you know, the late Chaz Chandler of the Animals was their manager, Hendrix's manager, out of the gate. So it all goes full circle, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Here, let me call up a song list here of the concert. Someone else can maybe talk for just a minute here while I'm doing that, if you don't mind.
No, we don't mind. One not a prelude with the shooters who to the truth of March. No, don't do that, Rob. But well, you know, you're lucky. You live where culture is, so you know you get things like that.
Well, I've seen the Flying Burrito Brothers. I get some points for that. You know,
when?
About a year and a half ago, they were up here in this little town, that little tavern that Mike Malloy and I seen Kevin Kenny at.
What you got to do is keep an eye out. I don't know when it'll happen, but keep an eye out for the next trip Jason Isbell makes anywhere near you.
Right, or Drive By Truckers, man. That song you played last night, Bob, that just blew my head off, man.
Oh, putting people on the moon.
Yeah, the payoff on that thing was just incredible, man. The way it ended, it just rocked. You know, what a great song.
They have a habit of doing that, but Jason's touring behind a new album right now, and the new album is just freaking fantastic. I love, you know, one of the things I love about taking long drives is getting an opportunity to just listen uninterrupted to, you know, when the damn phone didn't ring, listening uninterrupted to, you know, music I haven't heard or haven't had an opportunity to really pay attention to. And the new album is Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit, The Nashville Sound. And holy cow. I mean, it's simply astonishing. There's a love ballad on there, the likes of which I don't think anybody's ever heard, and I don't think anybody's ever written one quite like it, which is saying a lot in terms of writing music and lyrics. First time Ferg heard it, he bawled. Okay, he's a tough young man, but he's a sensitive soul too. Just bawled, and said, "I got to learn that, Dad." it's called "If We Were Vampires," and I played it for Agnes too, and she, who does not like for anybody to know that she is not just hard as freaking nails, and doesn't like for people to know that she has a hard exterior with a soft marshmallow center, she teared up too.
Bob, why are you telling trade secrets?
Oh, dear, you snuck up on me. Busted. Oh, I was talking about if we were vampires.
Does she have the scepter in her hand, Bob?
No, she's got the taser.
Okay. I can hear you. Did she borrow from Sister Carol Baker?
Wait. Did my internal monologue get loose again, yes. Baby?
Yes, it did.
Aw. You get a kiss. How nice. It's a phenomenal. It is a phenomenal album.
I have to check that out. Did you say Ferg was does a mean rendition of House of the Rising Sun?
Pretty passing fair.
That utilizes just about every chord in the chord book. So if you can pull that song off, you're well on your way at being a decent guitar player.
Well, he doesn't know how good he is. He refuses to acknowledge how good he is.
That's a tough song. In fact, but anybody ever says, I want to be a guitar player, that's the first thing I tell them. Learn that song, know it like the back of your hand, because it utilizes a lot of your seven chords, and it's a fun song to play too. And you can flip it if you're into that. Play a bluegrass style. Seldom Seen does a mean.
Well, okay, do me a favor. Talk amongst yourselves. Yeah. I'm going to go and see if I can. He'll tell me no. Okay, he will tell me no. But I'm going to go ask him. Okay.
All right. Perfect.
Stand by. And the audio won't be so great because I can't mic up two or three mics and all of that stuff. Now, stand by.
All right, Head On Live is back. That's a good sign.
So. Everything's back.
All right, perfect.
Although I'm being told that TuneIn apparently hasn't picked it up yet, or that some people are having troubles. Oh, hey, before I do this, let me send out thanks. Thanks very kindly to Alma and to Sylvia. Thanks to them, we are down to $370 to go. Thank you, Alma, and thank you, Sylvia. That's huge.
It's doable. It's doable. We can do this.
I'd say we could reach it. You know, we got about an hour and 17 minutes to go in the program. It could happen. So, okay, somebody pick up the thread of the conversation long enough for me to go and beg Ferg or bribe him or whatever it takes. Stand by.
All right, I can just say something real quick. The cool thing is that guess where Eric Burdon is going to be tonight with his animals? I think he's doing a beach tour. He's like going to be at the Santa Cruz pier tonight.
Now, when you say with his animals, it's just like pickup musicians because the rest of them are dead. It's like the Burrito Brothers. It's like the Burrito Brothers by extension, but they all knew Gram Parsons one way or the other, and they're still awesome studio musicians.
Yeah,
it's just a treat to see them, you know?
I mean, these guys, real treat. You know, I mean, I think he's played with these musicians before. I think they're, you know, because they're in sync. It's a real tight band. I mean, you can tell if guys have played together before, you know? And the band, you know, they're young players, but they're really good. There's one dude that looked like one of those guys from The Outsiders, that guy who's the fighter. I don't know if you all have followed that show or not, but, you know, he's got like a mustache and, you know, long hair, and he plays a hell of
cool.
a, you know, electric
cool.
guitar. And the keyboardist is really good. And,
But honestly, Rick, if you're a professional studio musician, that rule does not apply. You should be able to sit in with any band, and from the outsider, you would think that they had been together forever.
Really? Okay.
That's a quality studio musician, and they're rare, and they make top dollar, too, but they get no recognition. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay, maybe... I guess if you know the music and you can play it, but some of it's timing though, I think, Steve, don't you think so?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, because you know, Eric, you know, he probably doesn't sing the song exactly the same at any given time. You know, there's little variations. And I think, I don't know if, I guess studio musicians can kind of adjust to that as they're going along.
Right. They can make changes in real time, even if they've never heard the song, or they might let them get one take of it, you know. All right, we'll play this, and they'll do it.
Yeah, yeah. So I might have stepped away when...
Did you find the list? Did you find the list?
I'm trying to find it. I'm pissed off. For some reason, I can't find it.
Did they do Winds of Change? That's always been one of my favorite animals.
I don't think he did a song that he said he had performed 50 years ago for one of the first times at the Monterey Pop Festival, whatever song that is. And I recognized it. I can't remember the name of it, but that was a really good one too.
Labor Man saying Sky Pilot, dude. Did he cover that one?
I don't know.
That would be a hard song to do live. That's more of a studio song with all the effects and everything.
Oh, okay.
But I guess it could be done.
Yeah,
It's got bombs dropping and planes flying and taking off, and that would be a tough one to do live.
That definitely would be. You know, one thing I noticed in terms of the, you know, he was way ahead of his time, and the fact that, you know,
absolutely,
the songs still move you to this day, and the crowd was amazing. I mean, it was like, you know, I'm in my early 50s. Well, okay, I'm 54. I'll say mid-50s. And I would say that the average age of the people there was probably like 40 years old. I mean, there were a lot of people younger than me, and they knew the words to these songs.
They're singing along, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, is that Sailor?
Sailor Chick.
You can call me Nancy, too.
Hey, Nancy, it's Steve. It's finally nice to cross paths with you. Now, were you here the night that Trump won and we were all getting hammered? I don't remember.
That was me.
I honestly don't remember because I was trying to drown my sorrows away that night.
Yeah, so was I. So
that,
were we all.
That program actually doesn't exist. It never happened. Okay.
It never happened. Okay.
I texted Bob the next day and I said, Bob, I felt like I've been poisoned. I drank so much, and it was good liquor too, you know. But I never drank that much at one time to try to chase.
Oh, I have, but I mean, it's been a while.
Yeah, and Bob said, "Well, good liquor will do that to you." And it was Jack
and wine.
But there's a lesson to be learned. Never waste good liquor on a bad man.
I wasn't wasting it on a bad man. I've wasted good liquor on bad men before.
It was
circumstances, but
it was Jack Daniels, the anniversary edition, the stuff they used to make back in the 80s. Instead of it being 86 proof, I mean 80 proof, it was like 86 and a half proof. It's the stuff they used to make back in the 80s before they changed the formula. And I went out and bought a case of that. The whole fifth was gone the next day, and I felt horrible. And Trump was president, so it was just double misery, you know.
Yeah, it was a double whammy for all of us. Oh my goodness.
Bob, did you find the guitar player?
Yeah, well, we're tuning right now.
Awesome.
Nice.
We can try to sing along as well, if that's okay.
Nah, don't kill him, man. Don't kill him.
I'm actually told that I can sing in tune.
All right, well, good.
That's what Lori tells me.
Yeah, well, don't do it tonight.
Okay, won't do it.
I'm just trying to figure out how to get
you got to understand, you could sing in tune. You could sing like the bleeding choir eternal in perfect pitch, and it wouldn't matter a damn to Ferg because he's legally deaf, okay? So,
okay.
Well, he works alone.
Okay.
And before we go there, let me offer big thanks to Labor Man. There is a challenge on the table to help knock down, fill in this hole, and finish out the week. There is a Labor Man challenge of $135 on the table. And if other people will kick in $135, Labor Man will double it. Okay. So that's out there. And let's see, what would that do? That's 270. That would knock us down to only $100 to go to finish out the week. So big thanks, Labor Man. And hopefully that can happen in short order. That's a That's a huge boost.
I contributed last night, Bob, but when Miss Karen gets home, if you know, if she gives me the green light, I'll go on margin to try to help you out, man. We got to get through this thing, you know.
I'll kick some in again, too. I did pretty well on my last trip, but some of my money is going to my very sick cat who is in the veterinarian.
I'm sorry to hear it, Sailor Chick.
She is she's about 14 years old or maybe older, and she I called my husband about a week before I came home, and he says she's really not eating. So I got home, and she's curled up under a piece of furniture, which she never does. And I took her to the vet the next day, and she's in full liver failure. So yeah,
oh, no.
It's gonna be a good... she's probably not gonna make it. And she's...
you never know. I'd mortgage the house to save Cletus. I would.
Well, I have to live because she's had a good long life, and if she's suffering, just by Monday, they said let's see through Monday if IV therapy and prednisone and stuff like that helps. And
I'm pulling for you because I know I'm tight with my animals. I don't have kids, you know. My animals are my kids.
Well, my kids are grown, so they're not here. So you know, the animals are great company when I'm home and my husband's at work and stuff. And we're just kind of down to one. We had three, and the other one died of a stroke 2 years ago. Yes, cats have strokes. Cats have heart attacks. They have all that stuff. Yeah.
Sure. They get anything we do, you know. Mm-hmm.
Pretty much cancer, everything else. So.
Leukemia, oh yeah. Diabetes.
Yep, they get it all. So she's at the vet for the weekend again. So decided by Monday evening, I've got a shift. I'm a volunteer EMT. And when I get off the ambulance Monday, I'm going to head over there. And if we think she's really not improved all that much, we're going to make a very difficult decision.
Yeah, well, you have to be practical about it too.
Yeah, if she's suffering, So anyway, that's been my week.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to hear it. Yeah. Carol Baker updated us on Cat Stevens just yesterday evening. Apparently, Cat Stevens was faking sick to stay out of school.
Oh my God!
Oh,
leave it to Cat Stevens.
Not Yusuf Islam. It was Cat Stevens.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's Cat Stevens.
That's right.
It's a wild world.
Well, you know, living in Hooterville as she does, they wouldn't tolerate a cat named Yusuf Islam.
No, they would probably lynch that cat. So yeah,
That's a Muslim cat. That's a Muslim cat, as somebody said, right, Bob, a few days ago.
All right, so stand by. I hear Ferg
tuning up in the background there. I'm excited, man.
Yeah, he's got his cans, and we've only got one microphone, so I don't know if we're going to get more guitar than vocal or more vocal than guitar.
That's all right.
I have an idea to this, and I will take care of it, so don't worry.
You're just going to scream? You're going to point the guitar at the, you're going to point the mic at the guitar and scream?
I'm just
going to
belt this shit out. This is going to be epic.
Okay.
Awesome, man.
So let's see. Hang on. Tell me if you all can hear this.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, sounds good, brother. Rock it.
All right, here we go. Wait, what? You going to say something?
No.
Okay. Call the rising sun, and it's been the ruin of many a poor boy, and God, I know I'm one. See, my mother was a tailor. She sewed my new blue jeans. And my father, he was a gambling man down in New Orleans. Now the only thing that a gambler needs is a suitcase and a gun, and the only time he's satisfied is when he's on the run.
children not to do what I have done and spend your life in sin and misery in the house of the rising sun. Well, I got 1 foot on the platform, the other foot is on the train, and I'm heading back to New Orleans to wear that ball and chain. 'Cause there is a house in New Orleans they call the Rising Sun, and it's been the ruin of many a poor boy, and God, I know I'm one.
How about, okay, before you, just cut loose with one of your little instrumentals there real quick.
A little instrumental? Can you give me a second to tune up?
No, well, I mean, just do something. I mean,
all right.
That was fun.
There we go.
Thanks, bud.
You're welcome.
Let's see. Okay, so hold on. Oh, someday. Wrap those up.
Okay.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Berg.
All right, what do you think? I just you guys were muted.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
He nailed it. You didn't hear it. You couldn't. We were all clapping and going crazy because we were muted. But, yeah, he nailed it.
Cool. You nailed it.
Yeah.
I thought
they were clapping and going crazy.
I thought I screwed up.
No.
No.
Then again, I know when I screw up.
And, you know, that's another one of those things. If we ever get to do the full studio build-out, one of the things that I talked to Ferg about was you know, him becoming the house band.
Tell everybody I see.
See you guys.
See you,
you know, instead of, you know, playing bumper music at the top of the hour, just, you know, turn it over to Ferg and let him do something.
That'd be cool.
So, yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah.
And by the way, I have to update the challenge. Apparently, Labor Man and I share something in common. Neither of us can... cipher for beans. He meant that to be a challenge to wipe out the fundraising for the evening, so it's actually a $185 challenge on the table. And if that is met, then yes, we have another little Friday on the Front Porch community miracle. So if we can get people to kick in to the tune of $185, then we will finish the week and another miracle will have been accomplished. With no, no supernatural influence whatsoever.
How close are we, Bob? You said 185, right?
Right.
All right. Let me see when the boss gets home, and I'm sure she'll have. I'll be able to add something. I just don't know what right now.
Okay.
Tell you what, it's Rick here. I'll throw in 30. Okay.
Okay, so that's 155.
Yeah.
155 to go. Thanks, Rick.
Sure. You bet.
And. You know, folks, maybe, maybe it can happen. Maybe it can happen. And thanks again to Labor Man for making the challenge.
I'm throwing in 25.
Okay, so 30, 55, 185.
Nope, with one hand.
130. Is that 130 to go? Yeah, that's 130 to go. Cool. Thank you. Thank you, Sailor Chick. Thank you very much. Asa tells me, other than your sound setup is clipping to beat the band, Ferg is actually a pretty damn good musician. Yeah, beat the band. I see what you did there. And yeah, I was just trying to. It's kind of hard to. It's kind of hard to ride levels when you're dealing with it. Under optimum circumstances, you'd have a couple of mics on the guitar, and you'd have another mic for vocals.
Touch the reverb, he'd be ready to hit the road, Bob.
He doesn't know. I mean, I'm a proud dad and everything,
right?
But he doesn't know how damn good he is.
Yep. I know you use a lot of reverb whenever you talk about Hillary and the Devil. If you'd have just gave him a touch of that, man, it'd have been over the top, man.
Yeah, but I couldn't reverb the guitar and his voice at the same time.
I understand. I don't know what kind of setup you have, but it was awesome. I mean, he nailed it. Knocked it out of the park, man.
So, hey, I can kind of report a partial set list. I've kind of pieced it together based on my memory, because I'm looking at a set list that he did at the Monterey Festival this past summer in June. He started out with Don't Bring Me Down, and then I think he sang When I Was Young, and then he did Mama Told Me Not to Come, and then I think he did In the Pines. That was the Lead Belly song, and then he did House of the Rising Sun, and then We've Got to Get Out of This Place as the finale, I think. So he cut like three songs out of his regular set list, because it was only an hour show last night. So
Mama Told Me Not to Come, that's a Hoyt Axton song famously covered by Three Dog Night.
Exactly. I think Randy Newman was the writer of the song. That's what he said anyway.
Oh, okay. Well, I sit corrected then. I thought it was old Hoyt Axton.
I think I'm with you, Steve.
Oh. Well, he said it was a Randy Newman song, and I said, no, it's recorded by Three Dog Night.
I have trouble with Mama Told Me Not to Come.
Yeah, right, exactly, Scott.
No, by God, Randy Newman.
I'll tell you why, boys and girls. In my sophomore year of high school, the night before an English and a geometry final exam for the year, I foolishly consumed a very powerful substance, like about 10 o'clock at night, and was up all night having all manner of sensory input happen to yours truly. And the local Top 40 station, I think I can't put a key on what year it was. It must have been the year 69 going into 70. So this would have been the spring of 70. And Mama Told Me Not to Come was apparently still fairly popular at that point. And no less than two or three times did that station play that damn song in the dead of night when I'm freaking the hell out, okay? And having visions of Joe Friday and Blue Boy on Dragnet trying to talk me up or bring me down or something. And that damn song, to this day, when I hear it, I almost go into a, what would that be, a flashback of sorts?
A conniption.
There you go. I have kittens with crocheted tails.
There we go.
Or just about. So don't play it.
Well, don't worry, Scott. We're not going to play it, but they played it.
Thank you. Good Lord.
Eric Burden played it.
And in fact, Randy Newman did write it specifically for Eric Burden.
Oh,
for his very first album.
Oh, okay.
And by the way, I had a note from Don in West Tennistan. He said, Billable Rick, what a treat to see Eric. The oldies but goodies with the Animals are, of course, classic, but his best work has been the best 10 or 15 years to the present. An artist not to be underestimated.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing that's amazing is you see these artists. I mean, I saw the Eagles over the weekend, you know, the reconstituted Eagles, and they were tremendous. But there's just so many old rockers that are still going strong, you know, like Mick Jagger can still sing. And, Roger Daltrey has a real good voice still. And I know.
Yeah, we won't talk about Robert Plant, though.
Yeah, not Robert Plant, but I mean, I still think Paul McCartney sounds good, but some people don't, you know. But you know, I mean, there's a number of people who can still hit all the notes. What else did I see? I saw, I think Lindsey Buckingham has a tremendous voice with Fleetwood Mac, as does Christine McVie. Whether what's her face sounds real good is another question. Stevie Nicks. Stevie Nicks.
Once you get past the mumbling.
Yeah, exactly. But that was a lot of fun, that show, those shows at Dodger Stadium. I had a blast. And I think the highlight of the show was the first night. There was this mother and son that were like in the front row of the section, like, you know, before you have a 20-foot or 30-foot drop down to the next level of the bleachers, you know. And they were just having the time of their life. They were like dancing and singing and, you know, arms up in the air and smiling. And I took some photos of them. I'm going to send it into a local newspaper like the LA Weekly and get, you know, just say, here they are. You know, they were loving Steely Dan and, you know, it was
see,
just,
I would love to see Steely Dan. And
yeah, no, they were good. They were good. They closed with Kid Charlemagne, and that was just, just a great rendition.
See, I'm enough of a Steely Dan nerd that I like obscure tracks, like Throw Back the Little Ones and Pan Fry the Big Ones.
Oh.
And, okay. And I love, let's see, I mean, a lot of people's favorite, Here at the Western World, Haitian Divorce, Dr. Wu.
Oh, I love Dr. Wu. Yeah. 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 We had a client by that name, and I would like always sing about the client to one of my coworkers.
I love, for me, I mean, the music's brilliant. But it's the, my focus is always lyrics because, you know, I'm just poetically oriented. And some of that stuff is just mind-blowingly good. What is it? Down at the Lido, they welcome you with sausage and beer. Klaus and the Rooster have been there too, but lately don't spend his time here. Hanging out with the mayor and all his friends and nobody else. I like lyrics that are portraits, you know, as compared to, say, Peter Frampton, "Ooh, baby, I love you way every day."
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It doesn't evoke anything.
Well, Al Stewart's the same way. The way his songs are crafted, too. I like that as well.
Oh, yeah. If you got a chance to see him, you'd really do yourself a favor.
I've never seen him live. The closest he's getting is...
He lives around there.
Ohio.
I mean, he lives around there somewhere.
Does he? No, I think he was doing a tour of England most of the summer. He did make it to the U.S. He's touring somewhere in South Florida. Jay Cruzin, go see him. And Ohio. He's doing a couple of shows. That, I think like one in Tampa and one in.
He tours relentlessly. And you know, if you go on YouTube and you find some of his old. Back when he was being, had the big money from the labels and the huge bands and the stage shows, amazing. But lately, he tours with a guy named Dave Nachmanoff, who is both a guitar player and a like PhD in philosophy.
Wow!
And they absolutely tear it to pieces. Let me see, tour.
So you've seen him in concert, Bob?
No, it's one of the great. What, maybe someday if he ever gets anywhere near me, let's see. Brookville, New York, Old Saybrook, Connecticut, Danbury, State College, PA, Waukegan, Illinois, St. Charles, Illinois, Milwaukee, St. Louis, Denver.
Is that this year, Denver?
Yeah.
Shit.
Like I said, he lives out there very near you.
Okay.
Bremerton, Washington, Edmonds, Washington, San Juan Capistrano, California.
Oh shit. When is he in San Juan?
November 18th.
Oh, okay, good. That must have just been released because I haven't looked at his site lately. Okay.
And then two gigs in High Point and two gigs in North Carolina, High Point and Henderson. And it's really cool. He's touring in anniversary support of the Year of the Cat album and he's playing the whole album in its entirety.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, I wouldn't. That's not necessarily my idea of the best concert because there's so much other stuff.
Yeah, well, but you know, I think when a band plays an entire album, it has a certain continuity. Like I saw U2 play their Joshua Tree album in its entirety. Plus, they had several other songs as well, and that was just beautiful. That was just awesome. That concert.
Seen Kansas do the whole Left Overture.
They're playing in September in Thousand Oaks.
Oh, old Patchkin, they had to prop him up. He was that old, but man, they still got it. You know, they still got it.
Well, as long as they're breathing, Steve, they can do it. I think it's in their blood. You know, that's what they live for. You know.
And now, Bob, one of your favorites is Seeger. Turn the Page, right?
On a long and lonely stretch of highway,
by
northwest of Omaha, I was feeling really terrible about all the money I was making on the bus.
with my long hair and all.
Hey, speaking of Seeger, he actually sang Glenn.
He's
going
to look me up and kick my ass, you know that? Because he's a good guy. And I really respect his approach to like digital music and all of that stuff because it's hard to find his music now.
But that song's been played to death. I mean, Seeger. It's like that, or I don't care if I never hear Stairway to Heaven ever again. I mean,
well, no, I've got to have Stairway to Heaven because you know when you do this as long as I've done it,
I've heard it. 3,000 times at least.
You got to understand, if you were the overnight DJ, you didn't just casually, it didn't matter how many drunks and how many stoners called you up and goes, dude, play Stairway to Heaven.
Or Freebird.
No, the live version of Freebird, too. You held those two in reserve, like cavalry held in reserve in a battle, because you knew that one of these days it was going to happen. Because, you know, we're human, and these things do happen. And when it hits, and if you played Freebird and Stairway to Heaven in the last couple of days, you're fucked, okay? Because, you know, when nature calls and you know it's going to be a little while, you got to have those there because you'll get fired for playing the entirety of Inagata De Vita.
Oh, damn, I love that song, Bob.
But, you know...
Rare 17 minutes.
I play that to get on Lori's nerves when we play pool. I play Inagata De Vita at our local dive bar. She hates it now.
Okay, so thanks to let me throw this out there. Thanks to thanks very kindly, of course, to Sailor Chick and to Billable Rick who took us down to 130. Kitty in Boston took us down to 110. For Labor Man's Challenge, let's make the Friday Miracle happen. P.S. Ferg was amazing. I'd definitely love to hear him do some bumper music for the show. So that takes us down to 110, okay? And then V.T. Blom took us down to $100. And so we are getting very, very, very close with 45 minutes to go in the program. Oh, come on, Marty. You dare diss Stevie Nicks? I want my money back. Yeah, I'm presenting a false narrative about Stevie Nicks.
Bob, stop telling us what to say about Stevie, okay?
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Bob?
Yes.
In Stairway to Heaven... Actually, when I was doing overnights in the 80s at a pretty good adult contemporary station in Kansas City, about two blocks away, there was a little convenience store, and it did double duty. It was a great bathroom song if you had a long visit.
You said duty.
Double duty. D-U-T-Y, not D-O-O-T-Y.
I think he's fishing for a cowbell, Bob.
No, hell no. But I would fire Stairway to Heaven up, all 8 minutes of it, and jump in the car, take the shortcut over to the convenience store, pick up whatever I needed, usually cigarettes, and zip on back, and would be the commission and the owner would be none the wiser. And it was always great. That one, and what was the other one? Knights in White Satin was another good long song for...
And depending on the format, if you could get away with it, Kashmir.
No, we know that wasn't on the playlist.
Dun-dun-dun. Dun-dun-dun. Yeah. But yeah, you had to be somewhere that could do AOR.
How about Rare Earths, the 20-minute version to Get Ready? You guys couldn't pull that one
off?
No,
no, no, no. No.
That was too fire, bad. I think...
Do you know, here's a trivia question that nobody really knows the answer to, so you pull this out of your hat one night at a party. They were the first all-Caucasian group to get signed to Motown.
Get out, really?
Yeah, yep, for real. Look it up.
Oh, my God. I will.
So you can ask, who was the first Caucasian group to ever get signed to Motown? Nobody will know. It's Rare Earth.
That sounds like a Jeopardy question there,
reason,
Steve.
For some reason, it does. For reasons that I can't entirely explain, on the Motown label is the original Broadway soundtrack to the musical Pippin, of all things, starring, among other people, Irene Ryan, who was Granny on Beverly Hillbillies.
Irene Ryan, oh my goodness. Yeah.
But what Motown, what business they had doing the soundtrack to a Broadway show, I have no idea, but there it is. I've got the cassette somewhere.
But that get ready song was simulated live. It wasn't really live. They just piped in people cheering. And Janis Joplin did that with Cheap Thrills as well. So, little known facts.
You were just a font of trivia.
Well, thank you, Nancy.
I'm going to talk to you more often.
Yeah. So Nancy, what kind of a ship do you work on?
I used to be in the U.S. Navy. I was one of the first women on Navy ships. But now I work on research ships, and they're considerably smaller than what I'm accustomed to, or what I was accustomed to.
Okay.
I work for NOAA, National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration.
Okay.
Because I'm in a flex tour schedule with those guys, it's a full-time job with full federal benefits, but I work like part of the year. And I also work for some of the universities, like University of Hawaii, University of Alaska at Fairbanks. I work for Scripps Institute. And I just do gig work for those guys. So I do like little short trips, vacation reliefs and stuff like that. But I'm a licensed marine engineer. So... merchant seafarer, merchant seaman, merchant marine officer. That's what I am. And I manage the engines and the other machinery on a ship. And so, no, I'm not doing science stuff, but I help make it happen.
You're a support person for them.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Personnel. I keep the lights on, so to speak, and I keep the toilets flushing. And, me and my compadres, and we do a good job of it most of the time. And it's a lot of fun.
That's great. Very, very interesting life, it sounds like. I'm just a lawyer.
Go ahead. No, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just saying, I'm just a lawyer. You do a lot more interesting stuff than I do.
You're just a lawyer? You're just saying just lawyer?
Yeah, I know. Well, it sounds like you have more adventure.
That's quite an achievement, though, just to even, I've got a bachelor's degree, but I never even thought about considering going further than that. But, wow, don't ever say you're just anything.
Oh, I'm just kind of playing there, Nancy. Yeah, I know.
Unless it's just a gigolo.
Or just just a president, just a president.
Yeah, I'm just a post.
Told me the other day, hey, I'm just a merchant marine entry level positions or things like a food handler, ordinary seaman, wiper, you know, things like that. And I had some guy tell me the other day, you know, we were sitting there at a bar, you know, having a few drinks. And he says, I'm just a wiper. And I said, don't ever say you're just a wiper. You're just as important as everybody else. You know, we've got a engine department of like 5 or 6 people, and we make everything happen. And it takes everybody contributing to make that happen. So, you know, everybody's important. The chief engineer is important, and so is the wiper and everybody in between. So, you know, when I hear people say I'm just a whatever,
could you
just get a little bit depressed, you know, like, why do you have to say that about yourself?
Oh, I was just playing, Nancy.
But it's really cool work, you know, and I like working for the U.S. government. I plan to, you know, I took a long break between the Navy and coming back to sea, and did a bunch of other things, but I did not amass a lot of retirement pay or retirement savings. So I'm going to sell back my military time and get a retirement out of this.
Awesome.
And now, Bob, they're trying to screw with our retirement. They're trying.
Yeah, I heard about that on the news today.
You know, they're not happy unless they're messing with some, you know.
I heard about
that. Well, see, I was about to ask the question there. You know, if you're a Republican, you have to take it as an article of faith that there's nothing being done by the government that couldn't be done twice as well by the private sector.
Well, that's what this guy in charge of my department. I work for Commerce, and who is it? Wilbur Ross.
Yeah.
He's this 80-year-old guy who really should be retired and have his feet up somewhere on an island, you know, drinking umbrella drinks. And yet here he is, okay? And he's going to give us direction on how to do things like a business. I mean, who the fuck is this guy anyway?
Well, I can answer that question, who the fuck is this guy anyway?
I know he launders money for the Russians, and he belongs in a prison cell.
Well,
but
I really need
to watch what I say because I work for him. You know what I'm
saying?
Right,
and I was going to try to save you from that and do a little of the heavy lifting myself here just to help out.
Yeah, I know, but I already know about this cat, you know, but it just pisses me off.
Well, you do know that he ran International Coal Group like a business, and you know what happened when he did that?
He killed coal miners.
Yeah,
I know about that, too.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, if I ever have to meet this guy, am I going to say something to him about it, or am I going to keep my mouth shut?
You'll probably hang on to your employment as long as that still exists, because that's the question I was going to ask. What you do doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of that there'd be a whole lot of profit in it for a good capitalist profit based industry.
No, it's not. You know what we do besides look at shipwrecks and examine the condition of reefs, we map the navigational lanes and we maintain the navigational charts that are used by ships all over the world who come and visit our ports. And so if we don't keep that up, commerce slows down. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because it's not like it's asphalt out there. I mean, the channels change.
Every time there's a hurricane or a nor'easter, you know, or any kind of storm, the bottom contours change. And so, you know, it's a never-ending job. And some of the work is contracted out. Some of the oil and gas vessels have sonar, you know, bottom sonar, and they can map. And they provide us data, you know, we buy their services, and some of the states do the same thing. So some of it's contracted out, but we do a lot of mapping, and NOAA is the organization that updates the navigational charts. We're the only ones that do that. So if we don't keep that up, that's a direct effect on the commerce of the United States, you know, the economy. You know, ships can't safely, you know, come in and out of port. So that's a very important job that we do. And I really don't think that these guys even know we really exist.
And see, the thing that like the climate change deniers don't seem to understand is that even though they deny climate change doesn't much care.
No, it doesn't give a shit.
And as a consequence, if you're not paying attention to what changing oceanic conditions produce, you can have big problems. You know, anything from tankers running aground, oil tankers running aground and splitting open, to, you know, collisions, to...
Sure.
And the problem is, those things are real-world problems that y'all have to stay up on top of.
There's a real-world problem with a dollar sign behind them, yes.
But you can't stay on top of them unless you acknowledge the reality of the world in which you're operating. And it is a world in which sea levels are rising.
What really aggravates me is that Rex Tillerson, who is what, the Secretary of State now? And was the former CEO of Exxon?
Yeah, Rexxon Tillerson.
He knows climate change is going on.
Sure he does.
He acknowledged that climate change was a real thing and that we have to adapt to it. So what the fuck is going on? I mean, it's got to be about what I can get now, how much money I can get now while I'm still alive, and the hell with whatever happens in the future. Because these guys know this is going on. They know. The Navy is preparing for climate change. They've been building multi-level piers at the Norfolk Naval Base here in Norfolk. I live in the Norfolk area. Okay? They've been ready for this for a while. They know what's happening.
Well, I mean, it's part of the reason they're building those littoral combat ships, too, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, these guys know that climate change is going on. They just want to pretend it's not happening because they can rake in more money doing what they're doing now.
Yeah, the Corps engineers, they're on top of it, too. They know as well. I mean,
I live in the Norfolk area where the largest, naval base in the world is, Norfolk Naval Base, and we get so much flooding here now just from 1 or 2 inches of rain. We've got roads that are impassable. You can't get cars through. We've got parts of Virginia Beach that become impassable when it rains. We had the outer bands of Hurricane Matthew. What was it, last year? We lost 3 or 4 ambulances, 18 police cars, and a bunch of other, people lost private cars or personal cars. Because parts of Virginia Beach flooded that never flooded before. The Kempsville area became basically a lake. And this never happened before. And the deniers are calling it, it's just one of those freak things. No, it's if you look at the big picture, it's all part of climate change. Even though it was rain, the rain had nowhere to go.
And if they're saying, it's just an outlier, it's just something that happened that hadn't happened before, given the settlement patterns of that particular corner of the world, what they're saying is that hasn't happened in, say, 410 years of white European inhabitation, which by itself should be pretty terrifying.
It is terrifying. It's very terrifying. I've lived in this area for about 30 years. I came here when I was in the Navy, and I stayed. And I know this is anecdotal, but I don't remember flooding like this. It's gotten progressively worse. Yeah, and then since I came to work for NOAA, I started looking at data. And really is getting worse. It's measurable. It's quantifiable. It's real. It's not something you can duck and avoid.
Yeah, and what happens when Antarctica, just kind of says, fuck it?
Speaking of that, Bob, we just had an ice chunk break off the size of a small continent, didn't we?
Well, the size of Delaware, wasn't it?
A big chunk of ice that was, the size of Delaware, Rhode Island, just broke off the ice shelf.
I might have overstated when I said a small continent.
These are all things. It's not all one thing or one story or one bit of data. They're looking at data that they've amassed over a number of years. They're looking at trends, and they're seeing a lot of very rapid change. It's not the change. It's the rate of change. The change is happening very rapidly, and that's what people don't understand. This Earth has been through changes before, but the rate of change now is very, very, very rapid. And it's going to happen to their children and grandchildren. It's going to affect...
And it's not... And I want to just kind of emphasize this. it's not going to unhappen. And I know that may seem like a simplistic statement, but it's not. And you know, I saw the map, and you know, James Hansen, if you follow him on Twitter, Facebook, whatever, you know, he has delivered a jeremiad against the climate change science community for saying, you know, in a way, you're at fault because you underestimated. Because of the noise out there, you gave conservative estimates of what was going to happen, and it's going to be so much worse. So, and I never know, you know, because I'm just sitting here behind a microphone. I can't see the looks on people's faces, and I don't really get a lot of feedback on this, but I try to talk about it from time to time and just try to get people to think about it, and maybe it's one of those things that's just too hard to comprehend the scope of. But by the year 2100, when there's nothing of Florida left below, say, you know, a little south of Jacksonville, when Tampa's gone and Miami's gone, when the Everglades are gone, when the Keys are gone, when Cuba is two islands, much smaller than what Cuba is now. Where?
Don't forget New York Harbor too, Bob. It's going to
sure, but I mean, the thing is, Steve, the stark picture is the Florida Peninsula. Okay, I mean, there's creepy.
Peninsula was underwater when George Washington was walking around because he surveyed it, and they built canals to pump it out. Much of Florida that people know today was underwater just 300 years ago.
And so, you know, the question becomes, where are the people going to go? And it becomes...
Well, they're
going
to have to either leave, or they better get very, very used to living on boats or swimming, because they're... Let's face it, there's nowhere to go.
Because see, factor into this discussion as well, the fact that Florida is still net gaining population. There are still fools moving down there.
Oh, of course. A friend of mine just moved down there to start a business.
When that Delaware-sized chunk of Antarctica fell off the other day, about a week ago, I was watching a climate expert on, I think it was PBS NewsHour, and they were saying in terms of sea level rise, the effect of that happening would be negligible because it was already on water, but it was holding back another huge segment of that ice shelf that's on land. And
right.
With that chunk of the size of Delaware sliding off, it's not holding. There's less, if anything, holding back another chunk that's on land, but could very easily slide off with just a degree of, or a fraction of a degree of temperature change, and it would hit the water, and that would be some big doings.
Right. They know the rate of change of these glaciers and the ice on these ice shelves. And what they're alarmed about is the rate of change, how fast this is all occurring. And it's happening faster and faster and faster.
Well, let me recommend to people an article from about 2 weeks back at nymag.com, New York Magazine. It is called The Uninhabitable Earth. And whatever you think is happening to the planet with climate change, this article makes clear it is probably not, what you probably think is coming is not nearly as bad as what really is. And it goes into tremendous detail, and it brings up things that, you know, we don't necessarily think about, like all the really bizarre diseases that are going to be unlocked from the thawed out permafrost. You know, there are strains of, of frozen dead caribou, reindeer, whatever, thawed out recently and got like 20 people sick because the anthrax came back to life that killed it. I mean, this is bizarre stuff.
Well, and it's because everything is connected on some level,
even if
we're not fully aware of it. That doesn't change the fact that shit has consequences.
They're finding bodies that are appearing up in Scandinavia. This married couple that had disappeared some 70 or 80 years ago was found on a glacier that they had disappeared on, and the ice had melted.
Yeah, and one of the children orphaned by that is 79 years old now, and was just so gratified to know that they found mom and dad. Yeah, it happened in 1942 during Second World War.
Okay, I was trying to, you know, think of the details, but everybody had seen the article, which is good. And but they're finding that those are not the only people they found. They found dozens of other people that had been buried in that glacier, you know, because the ice is melting. And that's really got to alarm people.
Well, and what they don't consider is just like that saying that the sea will give up its secrets, the ice will also give up its secrets.
Well, it already has been. It's been doing it.
And they're blissfully, deliberately, willingly ignorant to even consider the possibilities. And that, after all, is their freaking job. Is to look ahead and to be on the lookout and to behave in a manner that's consistent with doing a good job when it comes to, protecting the domestic tranquility. You know, it's absurd. It's madness.
Well, I just want to share a passage from this New York Magazine article because the sort of just wow. The Arctic also stores terrifying bugs from more recent... Remember how when the dirty, unbathed white Europeans came over here with no hygienic practices whatsoever, they killed off the biggest part of the single most populated landmass on Earth? More people were living successfully in the Western Hemisphere than in the rest of the planet. And disease killed off a whole bunch of them. Well, we could see that happen again. The Arctic also stores terrifying bugs from more recent times. In Alaska already, researchers have discovered remnants of the 1918 flu that infected as many as 500 million and killed as many as 100 million, about 5% of the world's population and almost six times as many as had died in the World War, for which the pandemic served as a kind of gruesome capstone. That's one. The BBC reported in May, scientists suspect smallpox and the bubonic plague are trapped in Siberian ice, too.
Oh, good heavens.
Well, how nice. Siberian ice. Guess whose land that is?
Ours.
No.
And Russia's. Russia and us. But with Alaska, we're very, very...
Yeah.
I'm not trying to bring up shades of sick.
Bubonic plague.
Very close.
Yeah, bubonic plague are trapped in Siberian ice, too. An abridged history of devastating human sickness left out like egg salad in the Arctic sun. How's that for an image? I mean, that egg salad in the Arctic sun just made my stomach do flip-flops reading it again. But they point out that rock in the right spot is a record of planetary history, eras as long as millions of years, flattened by the forces of geologic time into strata with amplitudes of just inches or just an inch or even less. Ice works that way, too, as a climate ledger, but it's also frozen history, some of which can be reanimated when unfrozen. There are now, trapped in Arctic ice, diseases that have not circulated in the air for millions of years, in some cases since before humans were around to encounter them. Thanks to climate change, we may very all of us get to find out how it felt to be an indigenous American 500 years ago. And we got no way of dealing with it.
And Bob, there's another layer to the shit cake, and that is with the ice at the Arctic Circle shrinking and melting away, the water underneath is suddenly becoming more navigable. You can navigate in it in a ship. So what are they doing? They're crawling over one another to be the first to stake a claim for the drilling rights, thus producing more oil and burning more carbon and just adding to the goddamn problem. It's virulent insanity is what it is. There's no other explanation.
Yeah. Yeah.
We may all get reverted to 1870s technology, and I don't think we're ready for it because our houses aren't designed for that. All our houses are designed for air conditioning and plumbing and modern conveniences. And if we get hit with a setback like that, it's going to cause a lot of grief.
Look, Steve, the entire reason that places like Florida and where you are in the deep South become habitable is air conditioning. That's it.
Exactly. Okay?
Otherwise, it's unbearable. I mean, I live in a place where when I was a kid, nobody, I mean, this is just a fun little story, nobody had air conditioning around here. Except my dad, who worked around a furnace and had gotten accustomed to having an air conditioner in his home, when we'd come up and visit, he would suffer like Christ on the cross because he couldn't get cool. But and Bob, there was one place with an air conditioner.
Weren't the houses all designed differently? I mean,
no.
You had houses with high ceilings.
No,
I'm
no.
talking about 1920 houses.
This is a 1937 house, okay? No. Coal company houses were not designed with high ceilings to a no.
And
it
and
just
ceramic
didn't get
walls.
It didn't get that hot, okay? It would get hot in August. July and August, just like it gets cold in January and February. And the rest of the time was pretty well manageable. Everybody had fans in their windows and box fans and big, you know, big electric exhaust fans. And that was the extent of it, except for the one little beer joint up the road. And Dad would look at me and say, come on, son. And he'd go up and sit in the air conditioning at the beer joint and drink two bottles of West Virginia brand beer and buy me two bottles of Frosty brand root beer. It's a wonderful little memory, but it's also a reminder of what this place was. You did not necessarily need air conditioning up here.
Where I take issue with you, Bob, is I grew up on a farm in the summertime in southwestern Virginia in an old house that was built from the wood from the farm, and it was probably completed building in the 20s, and it was designed that the hollow, the wind came through the front of the door and blown through the back. And it was a three-story house. I don't remember it ever being unbearable in there.
Well, I mean, you know, July and August, it would have, you know, the humidity. There's no escaping the humidity. I mean, this was one of those just gooey, sticky, nasty days in Appalachia.
Maybe I was more tolerant because I was younger.
You lived in it. Yeah. My father lived in it before he moved to Alabama.
And if you don't know the difference, I mean, what do you got? You have no metric to compare it to. And I understand what you're saying, but my point is I think that there was a design change that came along when we had all these modern conveniences with the low ceilings and call me crazy, but that's my theory, and I'm going to stand by it.
Well, I mean, all I know is I don't know of any high-ceilinged houses around here that aren't mansions. But this is a unique area. This is, you know, coal company houses and coal camps, and they were thrown together as slapdash as possible. You know, on the other side of the coin, though, there's a little optimism. Ron in the not frozen north, who isn't in the frozen north right now, I don't think, unless he's gone back, says, I found this encouraging in the long view. India has canceled 14 coal-fired power plants. Because solar bids for the equivalent amount of power came in at a very much lower price. India imports their coal. China plans to be removed from power generation by fossil fuels by 2030. It's un-American, I tell you. But the question is it too little, too late? And I don't mean to be a bummer, but
No, if, I understand.
If you're into the science, you have to ask that question.
The house I'm in now was built in 1996, and you could not stay here without air conditioning in July or August, more than a week or two tops. You'd have no water, no electricity, nothing. I mean.
Right, and we live in an era now where, as with, well, like, remember when they had to shut down the airports, the airport in Phoenix, because planes can't take off in that heat? Or I remember when in the last couple of summers they've had to shut down the Browns Ferry nuclear power plant up in northwest Alabama because the river water got too hot to cool the reactors, okay?
I believe that.
So your take is it's just getting freaking hotter then?
Yeah, I mean,
plain and simple. Yeah,
I mean, the swings, you know, the bizarre weather events, we're going to get more of them. I implore people to go and read this, nymag.com, The Uninhabitable Earth.
The Uninhabitable Earth. I'm on the website right now. I was just looking for the article.
It is by David Wallace Wells, and this is not something, you know, this is not something to read right before bed.
But it seems like the nights were always cooler. Now that even the nights are hot as hell.
It's not going to get better.
You go out 1 o'clock in the morning, and it's like walking into a wet, warm towel, you know?
Right, but we live.
Last night here in Fort Wayne, it was 97 degrees. The heat index was 97 degrees at 11:30 at night.
Jesus, oh Jules. Goodness. We can't live like that. I mean.
We're going to be living like that.
Right, and I don't think we're going to survive.
I did a little bit of an uninformal poll of people. I said, come on. We're a science agency. Who voted for Trump? And I was amazed at how many people I work with who voted for Donald Trump. And I said, really? You voted for a pay cut? You voted for less funding? I mean, what the fuck? Excuse my language, but...
No, it's okay.
I've gotten a lot of... Well, from a lot of the Mariners that I work with, it, you know, oh, yeah, you know, he's a tough guy.
I don't even work with Mariners, and I use worse language.
Well, I mean, it's like there's a nominee for a U.S. The head of the science division of the USDA.
Oh, I saw that guy. The big fat guy.
Is a guy with no science degrees, but at least 13 chins.
Oh, yeah, he looks like he ate a cow. So he might be remotely qualified because he's got a cow inside him.
Oh,
let's see him live in a Louisiana shack for more than a week without air conditioning.
Perhaps he's related to Jabba the Hutt, you know?
Possibly. Just for folks out there who might be interested in it, the National Snow and Ice Data Center gives a lot of information about the Greenland ice sheets, and also has some information about the Arctic ice sheets. So that's just a little bit of information to dig into, because the Greenland, there's been a lot of talk about the ice in Greenland, et cetera, because that's been a significant factor working on here. So,
and you know, the hottest, you know, the hottest summers on record are all within this century. And people are, I don't understand the Trumpansies. Oh, it's a Chinese hoax. Well, if it's a Chinese hoax, then why is China burning too?
They are forgiving his Russia ties. They don't care that Donald Jr. met with all these Russians. They don't care. They think Putin is some kind of great guy because he's a tough guy. And he's strong and he's masculine and he's this and he's that, and he rides horses without shirts on, and you know, I mean, they're not rational people. I've really come to the conclusion that trying to debate with these people is an effort in futility, because they live by slogans and cliches.
Catchphrases.
And to return to the theme of the filibobster, then, it is incumbent upon us to understand that the only way we stop Trump 2.0 and Ivanka in 24 is by putting aside all this bullshit, accepting reality, and moving in a unified way to stop them. Because as I said, Republicans always vote for Republicans.
That's right.
Democrats, well, you know, maybe Jill Stein, and, you know, if Bernie doesn't get it, I can't vote for, you know, because she's the devil, and, you know, bullshit.
Yeah, these ideological purists, I just
they look
God.
At it like a sports game, like the blue team against the red team, and they're going to dig in their heels,
and
their red
it.
Team's going to win regardless.
It.
No.
Okay, and just one last thing as we head toward the end of the program. We kind of got stuck on $100. We were making tremendous progress, but we got stuck on $100. We got $100 to go to meet Laborman's challenge. And that'll put the week to rest. Please don't just leave a challenge laying there. It's a chance to, you know, out of that $100, your 50 becomes $100 thanks to Laborman. Your 10 becomes 20. But we got 8 minutes, and we got $100 on the table. And I can guarantee you that number won't come down by more than 10 or 20 bucks with the subscription overnight crew. So it kind of has to happen. So that's, you know, that's where we are. Sorry, not trying to be a bummer.
Can I pull in, Scott, and some of the topics you've talked about this week? You talked about quite a bit how corporate America is, you know, really screwed over the people. And Scott has talked about the cashmere bouquet before, right?
Oh, no, here we go. There's no end to the cashmere bouquet.
I got curious about this stuff, and I happened to look it up. Okay?
Yeah.
This stuff was pulled off the market. And the reason it was pulled off the market was because it was causing cancer deaths. And Colgate Palmolive.
Are you saying it's cancer bouquet and not cashmere bouquet?
You got it, baby. Colgate Palmolive has been sued multiple times because of the talc in the powder.
Sure.
Talc.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, which you are probably familiar with, because talc, it's my understanding, has been mined in your area, also tends to contain asbestos.
Well, if but not even that, Jules. It is a fine particulate by definition.
And it's a fine particulate.
And
exactly.
There are no benign ultrafines. I'm going to get a tattoo of that someday. There are no benign ultrafines.
No benign ultrafines, yes, exactly.
Because the example given by Mike McCauley, who's a friend, who's a really awesome scientist, is they work when you're working with particulates. One of the ones that you can work with is in its larger forms, like PM10 and PM2.5, is titanium white. And titanium white is benign. It doesn't do anything. It just lays there.
Well, see,
but when you reduce it, but when you reduce it to an ultrafine of less than, you know, less than 100 microns, it becomes toxic.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were supposed to stop selling asbestos items, I guess, back in the 70s, but they continued to in the 60s and 70s, and they continued to sell talcum powder until Colgate-Palmolive considered continued to sell this stuff until 1995.
Right, because of the capitalist principle taking precedence over the precautionary principle. It's like
exactly.
That asshole from the West Virginia Coal Association, Jason Bostick, who says, "Well, you know what? If we had the precautionary principle, people couldn't eat peanut butter." No shit.
Yep.
He said that.
Exactly. Now, the interesting thing is I've actually found a few bottles of this stuff floating around. But it's like, seriously, it is like $90.
Yeah, the scent is not the problem. The talc is. It's the powder version that kills people.
Yeah.
But the scent, you know, pretty profound.
Well, speaking of this talcum powder stuff, there was a multi-million dollar judgment that a woman in Missouri recovered for, I think, getting cervical cancer from talcum powder. And I believe as a result of a recent Supreme Court decision, that's likely to be overturned.
Yeah, the judgment will be vacated. Well, and that's the thing. Johnson & Johnson has been sued.
Right.
Yeah, Johnson & Johnson is the other company that's been sued for this.
So are you all saying that gold bond powder and shit you see advertised is like cancer causing? I suppose it is.
Well,
right?
To the extent that it has talc in it, for instance, I'm sure that when I was a baby, my little bottom got powdered with talc.
Right.
Yeah, but depends. A lot of companies have started using cornstarch instead of
that's
talc.
That's the thing. Oh, it's cornstarch now. Yeah.
Okay.
Because A, it's biodegradable. You know, talc is a goddamn mineral. You know, if you ever had your geology lab, you know that's about as soft as you can get on the Mohs hardness scale.
Right.
And it has to be mined, and they're negative. Imagine the people who had to work in that shit, mining that stuff. That's a death suit.
Oh yeah, that's where many of the suits have come from too. Is that the miners have sued. Now I'll tell you what. I'll give you a quick tip. Something better than using these stupid products. Take about 3/4 cup of cornstarch. Add 2 heaping tablespoons of baking powder. Mix it together. Put it in an old sock, tie the sock off, and use that as a powder puff, and you can put it in, you know, puff it into your shoes, puff it, you know, on areas that you might be rashy on your body. It works just as good as the stupid powder stuff.
Baking powder.
A little bit, yeah, cornstarch and baking soda.
Because, you know, I really don't want my butt to rise.
No. Baking soda, not baking powder. Baking soda and cornstarch. That's all you use.
Oh, okay. Because
as long as you don't have the yeast, you'll be okay, Bob.
No. That's the whole reason for baking powder. Baking powder is a chemical alternative to yeast, and it's heat and liquid activated. So all you got to do is sweat and get good and hot, and I guess your butt could be twice its normal size.
Well, baking powder and baking soda are two different things.
They are. I think you said baking powder the first time.
Oh, okay. No. Baking soda and cornstarch. Yeah, two good heaping tablespoons of baking soda and about 3/4 cup of it is cornstarch.
Right. So with the baking soda, all that's going to happen is your butt's going to fizz.
Yeah. Well, no, only if you have some vinegar in there. But
sweat's acidic, Jules.
Yeah, well, it's not that acidic, and you're not using that much baking soda.
I don't know. I was kind of looking forward to having a fizzy butt. Sounded kind of
kinky. I'll have to try that as a like an underarm puff, because sometimes it gets so hot here, I sweat so much that I get dishpan armpits. I mean, that's...
It works very well.
Well, and we're going to end the program babies. On that. Thanks, Scott. Thanks a million there, buddy.
Nice image, Matt.
I live to serve.
Thanks, Glenn Karen. And thanks, Steve and Ms. Karen and Cletus and little Twiggy. And thanks, Nancy. Let's see. We are within $20 of finishing off here at the end of the program.
I'll throw in an extra 10.
Okie dokie. Well, thank you, Jules. Thank you very, very kindly. So that takes us down to 10 to go. So, wow, another little community miracle for Friday on the front porch. And so we close off. Thank you very kindly for jumping in and participating. Thank you for being part of it all. Steve from Georgistan. And thank you, Billable Rick and Jules and Charlie and Nancy and John from Central PA. I thought we had you there for a minute, but I guess we didn't. Thanks all of you for a wonderful, wonderful week. More and Monday will be here before we know it. And I got a feeling they're going to be stacked up like cordwood, even in July. Thanks to all of you who keep all of this going. Thank you to all of those of you who, however you do it, spend your precious, finite time engaged in this program. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Steve from Georgistan, Midweek Utility, chat room moderator. Thank you to John Fox and Ben Birch. You know, part of the fundraising we're doing for July is to come up with the support money to keep WhiteRoseSociety.org up and running while Ben is out there looking for new work. And so that's going to be a part of the monthly fundraising going forward. So that's part of the necessity of getting all of this done. Thank you, one and all. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And please, if you purchase from Amazon, nominate Coal River Mountain Watch at smile.amazon.com, and a tiny portion of each of your purchases will go to support the ongoing struggle for human rights, human dignity, and human health in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Good night.